Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. As always, we're grateful for everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that they start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. And you can go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon-Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we'd appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll turn on the microphone, announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. And we appreciate whenever anybody does that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service, and if you would let us know how we can do that, we would be grateful. Alternately, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and or you can email Jeannie at jeanie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. If we get a comment or a question from you, we'll address it on the Internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archive for the feedback or input. So, we're back live today. Yesterday it was a recording of my interview with Brooke Seam, was a young woman who had spent 15 years on antidepressant medications and was still suicidal and was contemplating taking her life when she realized, wait a minute, if I'm on all these meds and I'm still suicidal, what would happen if I went off? And she started the journey to get off the medication, and then she wrote a book about it. And I had the honor of interviewing her sometime last year, just about a year ago, and that was the recording that I played yesterday because I had a patient that I needed to see at the 11 o'clock hour, and there weren't any other available hours to do so. So thank you for your patience, those of you who were listening live yesterday to the recording. And I highly recommend her book and that interview. It was enlightening for me to read the book, and it's right in line with lots of other good material about the difficulty with the lack of effectiveness of those, we call them psychotropic medications, right? These are the medications that people give for anxiety and depression and psychosis and obsessive compulsive disorders and attention deficit disorder, et cetera. And it's not a coincidence that I played that show yesterday, because today I had the honor of interviewing Robert Whitaker again. I interviewed him about 3 years ago. He is a journalist who has written two books. One of them is titled Mad in America, which chronicles the history of how we've approached and theorized and actually practically dealt with mental illness in our country, in America, from the Civil War time until now. And and he also wrote the book Anatomy of an Epidemic, which is a compilation of a compendium of research that's been done that is not well publicized that highlights how almost all of these medications that are used for mental health diagnoses were only always and ever intended to be used in a short term, and it's a part of a treatment regimen, and how that the knowledge of that has been kept out of mainstream media. And so if you want more information about that, you can go to the Mad in America, all one word, Mad in America website. And once there, you'll get all kinds of resources and first account stories of people who have experienced, lived experience with mental health issues, et cetera. And it's a powerful website, a powerful set of resources for people. And if you have any interest in getting really solid resources for what is the effectiveness of these various medications and or their prescribed uses, that's a great way, and you can get all kinds of blogs about people's lived experiences there. And the whole second half of the interview was all about the STAR-D report, which was done almost 20 years ago and has been used ever since as evidence of the effectiveness of antidepressants, when in truth it was a scam, it was a lie, even though it was produced by the National Institute of Mental Health. The the results they published were completely false, and they haven't been held accountable by the mainstream media. And this is to the great frustration of people like Robert Whitaker and the people that research this. And so he's trying to get the word out that whenever people cite this study of the effectiveness of antidepressants, it was all based on a lie. And so you can find out all kinds of information about that on the Mad in America website. And I'm among the many people that hope you do for your own personal edification and for the benefit of getting this word out. Now, the more people that find out about how the power and the money behind drug companies is working against our benefit as a public, the better. So that's an interview that I hope to publish within a couple of weeks from now. I will work to get it edited and uploaded as efficiently as possible so that maybe within a couple weeks that gets published in the On Your Mind podcast hosted by Journey's Dream. So, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1 on your phone, we can have a conversation. How can we be of support to you today? What's on your mind? I had a session with somebody earlier this morning about sticking to your values, communicating effectively without being abusive. When you strongly disagree with another person, and how when you do that, you have to be aware that some people may not like what you have to offer. And it's come up a number of times recently that in conversations I'm having with people about the difficulty with our language, with the way we talk, the way we're culturally trained to believe, you made me angry, you hurt my feelings, the cause and effect relationship that's assumed between an outside action or activity and emotions that someone experiences inside themselves, and how that cause and effect relationship doesn't even exist. The correlation exists, but the cause and effect is not there. And, you know, occasionally I run across yet another body of work where people understand this, and or they really don't want to go for a disease model of human behavior. They don't want to go for the model of diagnosing and labeling people. And one of those that has come to my attention again recently is from Marshall Rosenberg. It's called the Nonviolent Communication book. And he's got a book on it, and he has a Sounds True. Sounds True is an online kind of an audio school, sometimes video. And so for years, I have not felt compelled to read his book or listen to it on audio because it's just so similar to everything I've already done. It's so similar to what is talked about in coherence therapy and the Imago Dialogue and Michael Rice's responsibility communication tool, and the way Michael Rice talks about regulatory speech, and the way Robert Bolton talks about reflective listening and effective communication in his book. So I haven't felt compelled to dig into this because of all the similarities and overlap. Every time anybody brings it up, I go, yeah, that's exactly what I've been teaching, what I was teaching for decades before I even encountered Dr. Michael Rice's work. So, I have a husband and wife team I'm doing some marital therapy with, and they're both working through that book. And prompted by that, I got the audio file of what I thought was the book, and it might be the Sounds True kind of a seminar with the author. So this is listening to the author talking about his work. And I've gotten about 5 hours into that process over the past weekend. And it was a slog for me at first, because when it comes to the way I've come over these years to work with Dr. Michael Rice in his regulatory speech and try and coach people in the support groups and on the internet show, according to that model, because that's Dr. Michael Rice's model and that's what's being presented here. Marshall Rosenberg does not use what Michael Rice would call good regulatory speech. And so some of the words he uses over and over and over again have multiple levels of meaning, and he doesn't clarify them. It's similar in my mind to when The Course in Miracles talks about the world, and sometimes when it says the phrase the world, it's referring to the perception that each individual creates inside their own mind as separate from the actuality of life around them. And sometimes it's talking about the actuality of life that the Creator created that each of us interpret differently, etc. And Marshall Rosenberg uses the word need and our emotional needs and our human needs over and over and over again. And so it was a real struggle for me, but because I have these patients that are going to be working through the book and I want to be informed about it, I spent about five more hours over this past weekend listening to it at 1.5 speed. So it's quick, quick, quick. At some point, he says the word need and needs so many times in a paragraph or two that at the 1.5 speed, it's coming at me like, you know, rapid fire, I just burst out laughing because it's all over the roadmap for me of the different meanings for the word need. And it would be better if, in this case, you said the word want. In this case, you said the word hope. In this case, you said the word, et cetera. But after about the five-hour mark with that work, I had a light bulb moment that's been resonating deeply with me ever since. And that is that if I rewrite the dialogue, if I rewrite the script or the transcript from this thing I'm listening to on nonviolent communication by Marshall Rosenberg, the subtitle of it is Create Your Life, Your Relationships, and Your World in Harmony with Your Values. If I rewrite the transcript of what he's saying, and almost every time he says the word need, I put in the word goal, G-O-A-L, it is almost exactly, almost verbatim, what I was teaching people before I met Dr. Michael Rice, what I've been teaching even more concisely since I've met Dr. Michael Rice 20 years ago. It is uncanny how many of the same observations Dr. Marshall Rosenberg makes to what we do in this work. So it's nice for me to find that there's yet another person who's teaching almost exactly the same thing. And anybody who's been around Dr. Michael Rice for a while will have a really difficult time with this Marshall Rosenberg's work, the Nonviolent Communication book, unless they're able to make this shift and kind of mentally translate from the word need to the word goal. And then it's amazing how similar this work is and how the same observations that we are the ones that create our emotions inside of us and that if we're stuck trying to create something we have no control over, if we're not clear about what our purpose is when we start a communication or an endeavor, all of these things that Dr. Michael Rice talks about, Dr. Rosenberg talks about. He just does it with a very different language and a very different lack of focus on the specificity of the words. He has a very different, maybe he's as focused on the specificity, and yet the words he chooses, in my opinion, are not as well defined. And yet, over and over again, the same observation. I'm the one creating my emotions. I'm the one creating my response in every situation. I can't make people change what they're feeling or doing. If I approach somebody from the perspective of seeing them as another being of brilliance and light who's either temporarily forgotten or yet to discover their brilliance, if I recognize the truth of our lives as, you know, fellow venturers in the planet, all of these things he's got that are right in line with the work we do here on Mind Shifters Radio and pretty much everything I've heard, not everything, but pretty much everything I've heard come out of Dr. Michael Rice's mouth over the years. So if you know somebody that might benefit from yet another perspective, I say this somewhat frequently, that in the original four-hour audio CD of Dr. Michael Rice's work that introduced me to this, his body of work, he says, I'm going to talk about this from a physics perspective, from a psychological perspective, from a religious perspective, from a social perspective, because the more different ways you look at a situation and new material, the more rapidly you'll understand it and the more deeply you'll comprehend it. So from that perspective, anybody who wants to get a little bit deeper into this work, you might benefit by reading Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication work. With the one caveat that you might need to substitute the word goal every time or almost every time he says the word need. But I believe if you were able to do that, you would be enriched by that exposure or experience. And you'll find tremendous resonance and synchronicity between these two bodies of work. So that's my offering. I can't imagine that as I spend the next few hours in that book or on that program, anything will come up that will change that position, but I will certainly report that if that happens. So I'm just now getting a chance to open the chat room. So if you're in the chat room, been waiting, I don't know why it hasn't worked up till now, but now it is, or at least it says it is, so we'll see what that happens, what that does. Area code 541, you're in the air. How can we support you?
Yes, Celinda, this morning. I want to thank you for, I got in a little bit late, but I caught the drift of most of what you said about the interview you just did, and I'm hoping you will put that interview on the show as well, because it's really, I would really like to listen to that. I also am enjoying what you're saying about Marshall Rosenberg, because I had gotten the Sounds True when they had the CDs of his work. And about a month ago, or maybe two, I was browsing the free shelf at the local secondhand store, and I found his book. And so what you said about goals really helped me a lot, because one thing I have noticed is that if I try to keep speaking with regulatory speech to someone who doesn't have a clue about regulatory speech, that I start getting into the teacher mode and I begin to feel a disconnect. And if I can just speak their language as it is, it's sort of like going to Rome and speaking Italian, I have a much better rapport with them. I still use regulatory speech when I'm talking about me, but I'll try to do my best to meet them where they are. And so you're discovering the word goal to cover all these things will be really, really helpful for me, because I'm going to focus on that when people talk about wants and needs and things like that, to realize that they're talking about goals and maybe also the obligations. You know, or like, I ought to, I must, I should. And those possibly may also reflect goals. So any feedback about that?
Well, no, other than just keep playing with it, right? See what makes sense for you. As in all of these situations, it isn't the word that's important. It's the meaning that I give the word.
Right.
And if I give it a meaning that's in, you know, allows me to gain a deeper understanding or be in alignment with a certain teaching, then that's good for me. Well, congratulations, I'm halfway there. But if not, if I can't make it make sense in a smooth, congruous way within my own mind, then I should just understand, okay, probably what's happening here is a misunderstanding rather than a real difference of opinion. If I go at these things for the most part thinking, you know what, if this is an intelligent, well-intended person, it's probably more likely that we're both talking about and wanting the same thing. And we either just have different ways of getting that thing, and or we're just miscommunicating about it. We have different meanings for the same words. That's probably more likely than any serious discrepancy.
I affirm that because I've discovered that to be true in the best of my communications with someone else. And that's a very helpful reminder for me. I'm very clear for myself of what works about the regulatory speech for myself. It's just I want to make sure that I communicate that in a way that resonates well with the other person and feels like what they're trying to say in their wording. Seems like it's challenging sometimes.
Oh, it is. It's a big challenge, especially because we aren't even educated to the fact that that's a real important thing. So none of us are really well practiced at doing it. It's like, you know, anybody that teaches this kind of thing, like Marshall Rosenberg teaches, he says, you know, when you first start this, it's going to seem awkward. There's recognition that it's probably going to be quite awkward. And that's going to be okay, too, right? That's got to be okay, because none of us were experts at swinging a bat or a golf club the first time we held one in our hands. And so, you know, every one of us that learns a new skill needs to be aware of the learning curve and the practice required.
I call that the confusion phase from an old pattern and becoming on the learning curve for a new pattern. There's a great deal of flux and confusion for me anyway between those two states, which doesn't really bother me that much if I don't feel how would I put this? I just acknowledge that it's a learning curve, and there is always confusion for me with new learning, and it's all okay, like you said. So, but there's a difference between that and the confusion of feeling lost, of feeling abandoned, or any other feeling that I might have, issues that I've sat on for too many years and can't even feel a lot of times, and then I jump into confusion. So that's all good. Thank you. I really appreciate this awareness and this new little twist of the kaleidoscope that you've just given me. Much appreciated.
You're very welcome and deserving. Any other comments you would like to share or questions you have for us today?
Not at the moment. Thank you so much. I'm working on some worksheets and doing some tapping, so we'll see what happens. I'm taking the lid off of some really deep old stuff, and it's got to come out.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah,
good luck
always. Yeah, it's all good, Dr. Tim. Thank you. Thank you for your support and everything. And I'm good. I'm complete.
All right. Blessings. So just to recap from what I was talking about earlier in the MAD, on the website, MAD in America, if you go there and you just click on the little magnifying glass to do a search and type in star, S-T-A-R, and the letter D, then it will take you to a list of results. And one of them, the top result, is an article published in August of last year that's titled, "The New Data Reveal the Full Extent of the STAR-D Failure." And the subtitle is, "The initial study, which has been used to promote antidepressants, employed outcome switching to hide their poor results." And this is just an article about how, since the publication in 2008 of this study called the STAR-D in the American Journal of Psychiatry, those researchers have been criticized for misleading the public about the true remission rates in the study. Now, in a new study, researchers were able to obtain patient-level data, because it was a federally funded study and request for information, transparency, et cetera, they were finally able to get this, the actual data. And based on their analysis, the true remission rate over the year-long trial was a little more than one-third. So the study had concluded that there were 4,041 patients with major depressive disorder, and they were started on an antidepressant. And if they didn't respond to that drug, there were three more treatment levels that were individualized for each patient. There were 11 different drug combinations offered in the study. It was meant to reflect what really happens when people go to a psychiatrist or a medical doctor and they start getting, quote, treated, close quotes, for depression. And in the study, they ended up saying they had 70% of the patients respond effectively and go into remission of depression from the study. And the actual number, once they finally, when these researchers were taken out of the picture and the the reporters, right, the investigative reporters actually got access to the actual data, they found out that only about 108 out of 4,041 were actually remitted or stayed out of depression a year later. So instead of 70%, which was the lie that they published, only 2.7% of the people found any significant benefit from the antidepressants. And you might wonder, how could that be? How could a study from the National Institute of Mental Health get so corrupted? And I asked that of Robert Whitaker in the interview, and his answer was, the people that were putting themselves out there as experts to consult with, and they put themselves out there as neutral, non-biased experts to consult with the National Institutes of Mental Health, the vast majority of them were people who had worked actively to consult with the drug companies, and they were on the drug companies' speaking bureau tours, and they had a tremendous financial investment in making sure that this study looked like it was positive for the effectiveness of these antidepressants, when in fact the actual results were the opposite. It wasn't beneficial. So please do your own work. You can go to Mad in America and you can see a whole series of articles about that. You can read the rest of that article. And whenever it becomes available, I will make that interview that I did this morning available for people through the On Your Mind podcast with Journey's Dream. And I might be able to edit it and play parts of it here on the Mind Shifters Radio to give it even more exposure in a different venue. So I think it's valuable to have really good information, especially when you're trying, when you're taking something as powerful as one of these medications. And that's whether it's, you know, a medication for your irritable bowel syndrome or it's a medication for your depression. That's just me. I think it's really important to have good information about any meds that you decide to take. And it's hard to have that if you're being lied to by the people that you count on as experts. So, again, if you have upset coming up over this, boy, have we got some good tools for you. The Reality Management Worksheet, the EFT tapping, the breath work, whatever kind you use, it helps you get relaxation generated, whether it's the Wim Hof work or the Michael's connected breathing, as he calls it, still point breathing, or just the simple extend your exhale breathing that I recommend to people whenever they're anxious. I suggest that pretty much anybody that I work with in therapy practices taking a nice, comfortably full set of air in their lungs and then slowing the exhale down so that it's, you know, 4 to 8 times longer than the inhale. And I recommend that because that's a way to stimulate and promote the rest and digest response in your body rather than the fight or flight or stress response. And then the most critical piece in the whole process, as far as I have been able to discern, is my willingness to step into increasingly moving myself toward 100% responsibility for creating whatever emotion I'm experiencing. It is, it's amazing how powerful that lie is in our lives. The lie that says, you made me angry, you hurt my feelings, you're scaring me, you've offended me, etc. It's that lie is, and the effects of it, I would offer, I think Dr. Michael Rice offers, I know Guy Finley offers, I think Byron Katie offers, that lie is responsible for the vast majority of suffering we experience in our lives. And the ridiculously simple and yet not very easy, simple but not easy, solution to that is learning to take greater and greater in the moment responsibility, getting curious about how am I creating this emotion? How can I tune out the conditioning of my culture that has me looking outside of myself when I'm upset, scanning the environment for the things that might be hurtful to me, and just continually return to the inside? And I'm just, people get so tired of hearing me say this because I can't stop saying it, because it's literally the most important key in all of this work from my personal experience. And so, you know, one of the most powerful things I do when I meet with people is ask them to develop their early warning, the most early warning sign they can detect about themselves experiencing any kind of an upset. And as soon as they are aware that they're having any kind of an upset, physically, mentally, or emotionally, I ask them to take that calming, centering breath with a long, slow exhale, turn the focus inside themselves, and just ask gently, how am I creating this emotion, this upset, this tension, which might even be experienced as pain in the body? And I had just another powerful experience in a session yesterday with a gentleman who's probably 38 years old. And he had had an experience where in a business situation, somebody was trying to, bribe, pressure, extort, there's the word. Somebody was trying to extort $22,000 from him. And he stood his ground and said, no, thank you, and I don't care if you think you've got a paper that says I owe you that. I've never agreed to this, and all of our verbal agreements were this, that, and the other. So as he walked out of that meeting, sticking to his judgment and his values, and he got outside the restaurant, he felt a stabbing, a crushing pain in his side. And he's only 38 years old, and he's active, and he's healthy. He's got a job that has him moving, and he eats well and all this good stuff. And he contemplated that he might need to go to the emergency room. He was in such pain. He was doubled over in pain. And the work that we've done together over the years, he had a similar kind of a situation happen a few years ago with back pain. And the work that we've done came to his mind, and he sat down on a bench and did the breathing we're talking about and did some EFT tapping, and within minutes, the pain was gone. And you know, it was, it's not all that needs to happen here. Clearly, he had the the judgment that it would be good to get back into some therapy sessions. So he called me, and that's why we were having the session yesterday. And yet, the work he's done over the years set him up to realize if he's in pain, his thinking is in error, and he stopped in his tracks by that physical pain and just started to assess, okay, what just happened? Where have I been? What was going on in that meeting? You know, what am I feeling? What are my thoughts? What is my physical sensation? What is my goal? Let me just do some tapping and breathing on it. And to his amazement, the pain was gone in minutes. And that comes from, it's all rooted in, that simple beginning, first step. If I'm in pain, let me take a breath, calming, soothing, centering, relaxing breath, and turn the focus inside myself and just ask myself, how am I creating this? How am I creating this upset? How am I creating this emotion? How am I creating this distress? Even if you don't want to use the word pain. And as we've talked about before, it's simple, and simple isn't always easy, but it's very simple. I need to keep coming back to the basics of this work, each new present moment. And if I'm willing to do that, the results I can get go beyond words. Often, each new heartbeat. So, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, you can let us know how this is landing for you. What are we stirring up? What might be a benefit for us to spend our last 10 minutes on this Tuesday, the 23rd of April? I haven't mentioned it yet because I had a bunch of other things to talk about so far, but it's Tuesday night, so there will be a support group tonight. All the information you might need to join us in the support group is available on MindShiftersAcademy.org radio, our website, and it is set up so that there's a separate page for Tuesday and a separate page for Thursday group. And it's just a Zoom link, and I've done what I can at this level to get rid of the indications that money is required. We haven't required money ever since the coronavirus restrictions kicked in. And so feel free to join us. Feel free to share that information with anybody you think might benefit from it. It's from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, both tonight and on Thursday night. And I'm sure there will be processing done. I'm sure that there will be some discussion about work people have done between sessions. And there might be some other pundit that we listen to, some other teacher, whether it's Guy Finley or Dale Allen Hoffman or a Michael Rice bit or Ganga Ji or Abraham. We've been all over the map with those Tuesday and Thursday support groups. And as I mark it, the Tuesday night group will finish 20 years this August. So we've had a lot of variety and a lot of consistency with variety as we've been looking for different ways to get people to understand the power of the tools, the value of the tools, and the mechanisms behind the tools. Just as I was mentioning the Dr. Marshall Rosenberg book on nonviolent communication, which if you simply substitute the word goal every time you hear him write about or talk about the word need, I believe what you've got there is a very good companion, another way to talk about and think about the very same work that Dr. Michael Rice promotes. It's powerful, it's uncanny, and because of this dynamic about the way the human mind works, if you can get yourself to get through that book or that course, you will probably understand Dr. Michael Rice's work more fully and at deeper levels, because it's essentially the same set of observations and the same call for respect and support of yourself and others. And he's just got a slightly different way of talking about it and recommending that each of us learn to talk about it with others and to ourselves. His process of nonviolent communication is something that, you know, he recommends that we change the way we talk to ourselves, because we so often are talking to ourselves from a hurt or distressed perspective. So we're judging ourselves negatively, et cetera. And he understands that that's a distortion. That's counterproductive. That isn't effective. It isn't loving. It isn't beneficial in any way to be negatively judging ourselves any more than it is to be negatively judging someone else. And if you're looking for a little kinder, gentler way to get at what Dr. Marshall Rosenberg talks about in his book, Nonviolent Communication, you might tap into Bill Sturley's book, The Emotional Sobriety Solution. And or as a synopsis of that, you can listen to my two interviews with Bill Sturley on the On Your Mind podcast. And to get that, you can just go to onyourmindpodcast.org or journeysdream.org/podcast, and you'll, Mr. Bill Sturley has written the book, The Emotional Sobriety Solution, which is very, very similar to what Marshall Rosenberg wrote about years ago as the nonviolent communication process. So 563-999-3581. Call that number. Press 1. We've got about 5 minutes left. How can we support you? I have another recommendation I can make related to the We Can Do Hard Things podcast. Episode 299 is a compilation of segments of various podcasts that they've done related to parenting. And I sent it to a couple of my patients. Some of them are parents, some of them are not parents, because it's wonderful stuff, whether it's you parenting yourself or someone else that is not your child, or whether it's a way to affirm what you're already doing as a parent if you have parenting children. Just some really good snippets. And one of the things they talk about there that is so powerful is that we all have our own little foibles, and we all have times when we do things we wish we hadn't done. And that is nowhere near as important as whether or not we make a repair. And the repair isn't just an apology. The repair is a serious connection. One of the ways they describe it is, an apology might be, I have an upset with somebody, and I say some things that are rude or upsetting or angry or and blast out, and then I walk away. And then a little bit later, I walk through the room and just say offhand, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have talked to you that way. But, you know, and I keep walking. That's an apology. Even if it's a full-fledged apology and I don't say, but I wouldn't have done that if you didn't X, Y, or Z. That's no apology at all. But that's just an apology, not a repair. And a repair might, or a repair would look like, as I walk through the room, I stop and sit down on the couch next to you, look you in the eye and say, I'm really sorry, I overreacted, that was my upset, it wasn't about you, etc. And you make the connection with the person. It's not a hit and run. It's not a flyby. And what just popped into my mind when I said that is that there's also a wonderful letter that Glennon Doyle wrote to Oprah on the occasion of learning that Oprah's mother had died. And Oprah's mother was not by anyone's standards, you know, a role model for a mother, a good mother. She had all kinds of trauma in her life, and Oprah was being raised in a family with all kinds of trauma. And so the letter that Glennon Doyle wrote to Oprah on the occasion of Oprah's mother dying was all about mothering. It was all about how, in the shortest summary I can make of it was, how Oprah had managed to take the shards of glass that her parents and her life as a child had given her and weave it into a blessing for hundreds, if not thousands, of others. And I would just encourage all of us to do that, to think of whatever's happening in our lives as something we don't want, as pebbles, as shards of glass, as disruptions, and it's ours to take it and turn it into a work of art. That is absolutely possible. And you do that through the alchemy of bringing your true nature as this miracle of life expressing in form, bring it into active conscious awareness more and more often every day, and the rest will take care of itself, and your shards of glass will turn into a work of art and a blessing to yourself and others. So that's all the time we have for today. I'll remind us all that we come from love, we're made of love, we actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice. And if you're talking, Jeannie, you're muted.
Yeah, I was muted. Thank you. I appreciate you.
And you're very welcome.
I put those recommendations for reads in the notes for today. Those are awesome. Thank you.
And you're welcome. Did you get the recommendation about the Made in America?
Oh, no, I did not get that one.
The website is Made in America. And the article that we're recommending they read or look for is the STAR, S-T-A-R, space D. And if they just type that in the search bar on Mad in America. Did I say Made in America? It's Mad, M-A-D.
Yeah, you did.
M-A-D-I-N America. And if they put STAR D in the search bar, it'll take them to a series of articles about how important it is to understand that the research about antidepressants that they've been promoting for a couple decades now is a lie. And so that would be a big portion of what we talked about earlier in the hour.
Awesome.
And we've already talked to Celinda. I don't think you were on when that happened. So have a wonderful show.
Thanks. I appreciate you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I'm going to start Podbean as well. And we'll give Michael just a moment to dial in. And we do have a hand up, but let's wait until Michael gets up. Oh, Michael's on. Welcome.
Michael's here.
Hey,
welcome. Thank you, sweetheart. So if we've got a hand up, let's just go ahead and see who we've got to talk to.
All right. It's area code 765. You are on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jeannie.
Hi.
This is Sunny.
Sunny. Many moons ago, Indianapolis.
Yes. Yes. Reverend Jane. And
yes. Yeah, we haven't heard your voice in probably, golly, I don't know, 7 years? You've disappeared?
If it's been that long, but it's been a minute, yes. Every bit of four or
it's
five,
been pretty
I
close.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Welcome back. What's on your mind? What's happening in your world? What do we owe this call to?
Well, you've crossed my mind so many times most recently as the changes are going on in our world. I've been very instrumental on a Telegram channel and holding the space for folks out there in the hubbub of it all. And your name, and I share your wisdom to the best of my capability. And I have read the commitment aloud to dispel many misunderstandings, to help offer clarity to the room between people. And I cannot ever probably thank you enough for everything that you have been in the world. I lost
we're just
my professor.
Started, you know.
Yes, lost my professor
yeah,
2 years ago. Yes, I know. So the work has just begun because people are so much more receptive and can hear us now. And, you know, my REAMS practitioner, he would be delighted if he were still here with us. He's been gone 2 years now. And we just have to honor those folks
Could
who have come
cool
and gone.
Could be Gary Reams were around.
Oh, yes, yes.
Would love to
so
hang out
know,
with
I,
him again. That was a different world.
Their energy is, I really feel their energy is still with us. You know, they've left their impression in this world. And just
you know,
joy.
I don't know whether I ever shared this with you. I probably did, but it's been so many years. Way back, well, one of the years when I keynoted at a conference called Global Science out in Denver, Colorado, was the year that Kerry died. And I actually did they asked me to do his eulogy aside from my keynote presentation. So that was kind of a, that's like, he's been gone, what, 30 years? That's got to be 30 years ago.
Yes, and I met my professor, one of his primary students, like 6 months after Kerry's passing. And because I wanted to meet him, I asked my teacher, I said, could I ever meet your teacher? And he said, I'm very sorry, but we lost him about 6 months ago. So I was 17 when I met my professor. So it's been a minute ago, right?
A minute, at least.
Yeah. But they're all being honored, those who have gone before us. And you and Jeannie have, wow, and thank you, eternally thank you for being what you still are after all these years, never swaying, never budging, never consistency of knowing your purpose and rocking it out. You're beautiful, and The world needs more of it, and thank you for making sure that gets to happen, getting more of that out in the world. So,
cool.
And I had just...
But did you call with a particular question in mind? Or?
No, just this huge...
Anything in particular going on?
No, truly. I would imagine in a regulatory speech conversation, you would find something for me. there are people out there making their best effort, and I wondered about the radio show again, you know, any changes. I'm glad I called you and connected on the phone as to how to make you more available to the world, what the best source would be, and apparently it's this radio show.
All of the above. One of the things we're currently working on is building our YouTube channel. If you go to YouTube and type in Michael Rice, you'll come to our YouTube channel. There are a couple hundred videos there. And we're working on, actually, we've got about more than 5,000 radio shows now in the archives. We're in our 14th year of 5 days a week. And we were looking for people to support us who are willing to convert. You know, the radio show is an audio file, and to go on YouTube, it has to be an MP4, which is a video format, although you can put an audio on without the video. And so we're looking for folks who might support us in doing some converting, you know, putting them on their computers, converting it to an MP4, breaking up the two-hour workshop or the two-hour show and cutting into two separate hours, and then converting it to MP4s. So that's one of the other things we're doing to build our YouTube channel, and we're also doing a bunch of shorts and intensives online. We've got a self-study codependence intensive now. It's just, you know, everything we can do. We're not traveling anymore. About 5 years ago, Jeannie's dad became ill, and we chose to come here to take care of him. He really didn't want to leave his home. And about the same time that happened, we had a new granddaughter who's now, well, in August, she'll be 6, and we'd raise her a couple, 3 days a week. So we're homebodies. We don't travel anymore, or at least rarely, actually. The first workshop series I've done in 5 years, travel workshop, is actually going to be the first weekend in May. I'm going to be in Sarasota, Florida. The medical center there doing a 3-day Friday, Saturday, Sunday workshop series. So that's kind of the skinny on it. That's what's happening.
Beautiful.
But if you put our YouTube channel out, that'd be awesome. If you know anybody that would like to volunteer and assist, has got a computer that we can give instructions for how to edit an audio file and then post it for us or send it over to us, and we'll get it uploaded to our YouTube channel and expanding in that regard. And so, you know, and of course we've got a self-study intensive. I'm now actually just recently started doing 3-day one-on-one personal intensives. Actually, it's turning into 3-day plus. We've got one gentleman that's planning to come up from Sweden. Since he's coming so far, he's going to do a 6-day. But just doing one-on-one, face-to-face intensive, people come to here to Bristol, Virginia, and do a 3-day super intensive, quantum still point intensive. So that's kind of the long and short of what's happening.
Okay. Actually... intuitively or otherwise, it just referred this sweet soul to your YouTube links. And
oh, cool.
I'm very interested in hearing what the other callers have to say. And I'm going to listen and enjoy the show to the best of my ability. I'm on my phone. I don't have computers, just the phone. Unless it rings, Michael, I am looking forward to enjoying the show today. And further conversation, if we can do that one-on-one for some options of the things of which you speak, I may be able to assist you and help you connect you to some people there and discuss with you the possibility.
Well, we're here to have the conversation.
I would love the possibility of you and Jeannie guesting on my Telegram channel on a Saturday afternoon. That would
be open to that.
Such an honor, and actually...
sure.
Growing your audience as well and finding the support systems you need to keep on doing what you've been doing almost all my life. All my life and more. Yes.
Yeah.
I love you.
It's interesting, you know, of all the places over the last 50 years that I've spoken different, you know, especially Unity centers, I still carry one minister's picture in my billfold. Guess who?
Dr. Rain.
St. Jane.
St.
No, St. Jane. Lady Jane.
Y'all, Lady Jane.
She is such a sweetheart. Yeah.
She is. And she's
so I keep her vibration with me all the time and communicate with her regularly. Pull it every once in a while and say hello and how are you doing, young lady? So
yeah, she's been hanging out. And I just had to come to the, I was like, okay, I'm calling Michael. It's just, he's there, it's there, she's there. These people need you. They need us. They need all the hearts and minds that are learning from you to do the best they can, as I do with anything you've ever imparted onto us. And keeping your torch lit. I love you guys very, very much.
Cool.
All right. All right.
All right.
We will
have a blessed one.
We will do more yet. Okay. There you go.
All right. Take care. Okay. Bye-bye.
You too.
Small world. Interesting how circle in and around and back and forth. And it's always fun to hear what people do with the tools when they pick them up and put them to work. We've actually got a medical doctor here who, when we first came to Bristol, he's an alternative physician. And when we first came here and connected with him, he was like, oh, I know about your work. You do forgiveness work, oh, Aramaic forgiveness work. Oh, well, yes. Oh, well, Lady Jane was the one that had introduced him years before. So it's interesting to see how things just move around and get around. Round, round, get around. I get around. So welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're with us. Honored that we get to move this conversation forward. I hope that the reading that I did yesterday from this new article on what needs to be done to heal the conflict in the Middle East, and of course not just the conflict in the Middle East, but the conflicts throughout literally every family system, every community throughout the world. You know, for me, in doing the research on that article, one of the, you've heard me on the radio show for years talk about how insane war is and the idea that war is just a racket, it's just a money-making thing. And I used to quote, there was a piece of research that Jeannie came up with when she was doing her degree in psychology. And this goes back, hey, Jeannie, how long have you been out of school now? 10 years, 12 years, something like that?
I graduated in 2013.
2013, so 10 years, going on 11. Anyway, she came up with a piece of data back then that said that in the 75 years previous, there had been about 175 million people killed in war. And as I read yesterday in that article I was writing, I was doing some other research, and there's a group in Canada, and it still boggles my mind. When I first read it, I was just in tears. But it boggled my mind to read that from 3,600 to 1974, that this Canadian group that studies peace and war had come up with an estimate of 2 billion people being murdered in war. How many people on the planet do you suppose need forgiveness? And I'm not talking about how many people do you suppose need to be let off the hook. That's a whole fake fraud conversation. People who drive around with these bumper stickers on their car saying, I've been forgiven. Let's talk, because you don't have a clue what forgiveness means. the Greeks came along and totally bastardized the concept of forgiveness, turned it upside down, inside out, on its head. That's why there's still so much conflict in the world. Forgiveness has got nothing to do with the Greek story that, well, you know, it's all their fault. And when somebody says something, somebody else's fault or their own fault in a blameful way, then you know that they bought into the Greek conversations. Well, you know, you did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay, I'll forgive you. I'll let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, which, of course, totally and completely means I have to hide from myself what's happening inside of me. Which means, of course, I get to do the title of my book. Why is this happening to me again? Because if it's inside of you, guess what? You're going to get to do it over and over and over again until you finally get done with it, until you forgive it. And that, again, has nothing to do with letting it off the hook. Until you remove that energetic pattern from your structure, you're going to say, why is this happening to me again? Or why are they doing this to me again? Or why am I doing this to myself again? Rest assured, if somebody's telling you you have to forgive somebody else for something, do not believe them. It's a fraud, and it's a fraud that perpetrates whatever the travesty is that's occurred. And I think that's such an important thing to understand. You know, probably the greatest atrocity done to us as human beings down through the ages is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. You and I are creative beings. Which, of course, is an idea that everybody loves when the creation's going well. But when the creation's not going too well, doesn't everybody have the name of the person whose fault it is? And isn't their name always them? When somebody says that, you know that they are a card-carrying member of the one world universal religion of blame. Why have 2 billion people been murdered on this planet? I mean, that number is just mind-boggling. 2 billion people. You know, what's that? Less than 6,000 years. 2 billion people. Why? Because they don't have forgiveness. And that doesn't mean they don't have somebody who's let them off the hook. They've never engaged in removing from themselves the creative patterns of trauma with which they recreate their pattern or their trauma over and over and over again. Don't believe that the Creator is ever going to forgive you for anything. And the reason the Creator is never going to forgive you for anything is because the Creator has never judged you. There's nothing to be forgiven for in that sense. But if you hold pattern that's based in some sort of hostility or fear, then you'll create the circumstance over and over and over again until you remove that pattern. And the technology of removal is called forgiveness in the first century Aramaic context. That's the primary purpose of every conversation we have in this work. And making those tools available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And so I'm going to turn back, unless you've got another hand up, Miss Jeannie.
Nope, it is all quiet.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to go back to the dictionary in our Enlightenment book from the Kabor's manuscript. We've had so many conversations recently, it almost seems like, you know, we've fallen away from the Enlightenment study that we've been doing. And that, of course, we want to include in the study of that book every conversation, every kind of process that there is to have. And so that's what we've been doing, and it's stimulated so much conversation that the book has almost been left behind. But it hasn't been. It's still here. And we're on page 81 in the dictionary part of the text. And I want to look at, and if you're new to the show or you haven't been listening, what we're looking to do is to go to specific ideas from the Aramaic that helps us to build a mind structure that allows our minds to generate perceptual constructs that match what the Aramaic mind was thinking when it spoke or thought in terms of a particular set of words and ideas. And so we've been doing this now. What are we on, Jeannie? Probably day 80 or so?
No, it's 68.
68? Oh, I was thinking we're a little further along than that. So there are, Jeannie's got a dedicated page on whyagain.org that has the links for the last 67 days of shows that we've done focused on the Enlightenment book. And so I want to go to a noun, the word mahik in Aramaic, which is humility. And this is such a major mind shift from what the culture tells us about humility. You know, basically we live in a culture that tells us, well, you know, you just kind of growl in the earth like a worm, you be humble. But that's got nothing to do with the mind structure that the Aramaic mind came up with when it spoke about Mahik. So humility, the word just translates humility, respectful, lacking arrogance, cooperative, peaceful. And it's a concept that's a mental quality. It's a word that represents a mental quality of perceiving and cooperating with the good desires of others. That's humility. So rather than, you know, I mean, the Greeks have taken so many words and turned them exactly backward. I don't particularly, you know, relish mentioning him, but there was one particularly bright mind in history, a gentleman who's probably responsible for more deaths on planet Earth than any human being in history, Vladimir Lenin. And one of the things he wrote, brilliant insight, if you want to destroy a culture, change the meaning of its words. And so when you change the word humility to, you know, act like a worm, grovel in the earth, rather than, oh, in yourself the mental quality of being able to perceive and cooperate with the highest and best, with the good desires of others. If you just change that one idea in somebody's mind, how different are their lives going to be? Rather than going around groveling, it's going around looking for what's the highest and best in you that I can cooperate and support with. And so, and it has a dual effect. One, it allows us to really be there for another person in a way that's meaningful to that other person. Because if I can see the good desires in another and I choose to cooperate with them, that person's likely going to feel supported. And if they don't, if it's an issue in their lives of not being supported, then they're probably going to start to experience being supported. And two, if I can look for the good desires in others and there are deficiencies in my own mind, then I'm engaging in the energy of those higher energetic patterns that we would call the good desires in others. So I get to acquire new energetic patterns within my own mind. So there's a dual step forward when you understand the Aramaic idea of humility, as opposed to what is kind of presented as something supposedly positive, and that is, well, you just grovel in the earth, make nothing of yourself, pretend you have, you know, you're not worth anything, then you're humble. I mean, just think about that one idea. A child's growing mind, and they're taught to look for the highest and best in everyone that they look at. And unless there's safety, you know, unless there's something coming at them that they have to deal with, they can just let go of the rest. Imagine that compared to go around, you know, put your face in the ground, put your face in the dirt, and let everybody know that you're nothing but a piece of dirt. Just kind of the Greek uptake on humility.
You have a hand?
One word will make a mega change in somebody's life. And let's see what our caller's got to say.
It's Rex, area code 517. You're on the air. Or Mitzi.
Hey, everybody. Hello. Good morning again. Say hi or afternoon.
Hey, young man.
I'm remembering, and I always check that when I think I'm really actually remembering something. But what I remember is the definition in the ancient Aramaic was to see the highest and best in yourself and then to see the highest and the best in another and join in the highest and best intentions of another. So can you speak to that, please? That's what I remember you teaching before. Has it changed or am I misremembering?
Well, no, I think that when we talk about it in laws of living, we expand it out into examples, but technically speaking, what the scholars came up with from the Aramaic is the concept, quote, the concept is a mental quality of perceiving and cooperating with the good desires of others.
Okay.
And of course, as you start to do that, you're going to be, we would expand that out. We've expanded that out in the conversation in laws of living too. And of course, you're going to see more of the highest and best in yourself and others. And it's going to lead to more cooperation. It's going to lead to higher productivity in the world and, you know, many other things if you expand that out. So I think that's what you're referring to from laws of living.
Yes. And I wondered if, that in order for me to see and join in the goodness of another, I must be able to see that in myself first to be even be able to actually perceive it or witness it in them.
Right. Well, that was the other side of my explanation when I spoke of if it's something that I'm deficient in and I'm looking for it in others, I'm going to build that very energy into myself, and that would be another benefit from having humility. So it's
awesome.
It's a two-sided. I would see it as a two-sided coin. One, I'm supporting this other who perhaps, you know, has never felt supported before, so they're going to experience an uplift. And if I'm looking for that and it's a quality that I don't have, then by observing and participating in that quality in them, I get to build the brain cells in myself, and I get to move in that direction as well. So everybody gets uplifted.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, sir. Be blessed. Any other thoughts? Okay. Anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue, sweetie? Okay, then let's look a little further down the list.
Yes,
there are a few examples if you want.
I was having challenges with my mute button. Yes, we do have another hand up, and I believe it's Esther. Area code 646, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you? Thank you.
What's on your mind for today? How can we support you?
Well, I just want a change in my life, but I'm trying to go about it. But I think I'm not doing a good job. So, you know, with love and finance and stuff like that.
Is there some specific question that you have that we can support you with? Something specific going on in your world that we can help uplift you with?
Yeah, I was thinking about my ex, but I was thinking about my ex.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, a good starting point with that, and our culture speaks about exes very often, one of the things that we suggest that you might want to start doing is changing your perspective, and rather than exing someone out of your life, you might start to speak of and think of your former, someone you're not currently in relationship with, but your former will tend to change the energy that you hold in yourself around your former, whether you ever see him, speak to him again or not, and also changes the mind energy that you extend out into the world in regard to someone you've been in a relationship with. So that can be a simple change of mind. You know, if we go to the opening words in the book of John, where the Greeks tell us, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. In Aramaic, what it says is, in the beginning was, or pardon me, where the Greeks say in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh in Aramaic, and I'm so used to saying that, it just kind of automatically went there, was the mind energy.
Oh, wow.
When we engage in mind energy, that literally, what they're showing in the cell biology laboratory, is that literally becomes chemistry in our bodies, what we call chemistry. And so just starting to change your mind around simple things like, instead of X-ing someone, a former, can be a powerful place. If there are issues that you have still going on inside of you in regard to your former, then you might step into the forgiveness process and start doing some of the forgiveness worksheets around it. And that is something you can access on our website. Our website is whyagain.org. If you go there, you can actually, if you go to the site, in the upper left-hand corner, there's a link that says Start Here, and it'll explain about how to start to use the worksheet process. And you can actually do the forgiveness process right there on the site. You can download the worksheets and print them for yourself and do them in writing. And or if you go to your app store on your phone, we have the world's only forgiveness app. And to find that app, if you go to your app store, just type in three words, Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, all one word, Heartland Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And you'll be looking at an app that comes up with a kind of a red glowing heart on it. And if you download that, then you can start to utilize the forgiveness process right there on your phone. You don't need to print it or anything. You can just do it right on your phone. And so you might start doing some worksheets around whatever issues are left over from that relationship. And as you do that, there'll be a tendency to come into possession of a cleaner, clearer mind within yourself, which, you know, it's the root of everything, right down to and including what people call our physical chemistry. So that might be a starting point for you.
Okay.
On the website, there's also a copy of what we call My Commitment, and there are several forms of it. You can download it free, print it from the website, and there's a commitment that I speak to myself in the mirror, and that might be something to start to work with, you know, directly with your relationship with yourself. And there's also a commitment to utilize with children, to utilize with spouses or just other folks in the world. And we have a business form of the commitment. So that's another, it's kind of like a tool that helps to guide into higher spaces in the world as normally, you know, led us in terms of how we develop our lives and our relationships with each other. So there are a few of the tools you might start to use.
Okay. That sounds good.
Cool.
All right.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, any other thoughts for you today?
My mother passed, and I always wondered if I was doing a good job.
How long ago did she pass?
About four or five months now. About 4 months.
Well, holding space for you, that can certainly bring up a lot of pain, a lot of trauma. And again, that would be a place to use the worksheets. And if there were, were there any conflicts with your mom?
No.
No? Well, that's nice.
No.
That's nice that you were in a clean space with her.
Oh, yeah. I was a caretaker.
Ah. Well, congratulations. Pretty sweet gift to give her. A lot of children can't do that for their parents because they have too many issues to deal with. So
that's pretty awesome
that you're able to do that and be in a clean, clear space with her.
You know, when their parents turn around and had to go and sacrifice, their life for you, bringing you up, make sure you was okay, and you have shelter, you have food, you know. I couldn't be that kind of daughter.
Sweet. Good for you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Holding you in a blessing. And if you choose to do worksheets and you get started with it, if questions come up, please call and ask.
Yeah, I'll go on the website. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right, blessings. All righty.
Blessings.
There are no other hands up. Continue.
So the next work, if we, again, we're on page 81 in the Enlightenment book, in the dictionary, Malkuta. Human judgment and behavior produced by harmony with an outside will. It is usually rendered an estate, a condition, a kingdom. Malkuta Dishmaya. So when they talk about the kingdom of heaven, they're talking about a community of love, that there's harmony, and it goes beyond just what happens within our own internal structure, and literally is the place where we connect with that, you know, what people have called God, what people have called a higher power, and that when we choose to connect with that. When they talked in Aramaic, when they spoke about the kingdom of heaven, it was really more a community, and that was a community of connectedness, a community of love. And so when that's spoken of in the scriptures, that's really what they're talking about, that being in that space of love. And so if we go to the top of the next page, 82, Malkuta Dishmaya. Dishmaya is a noun. Also, it's also pronounced Bishmaya. And just 1 second. So it's a noun where Dishmaya is a descriptive phase. Malkuta Dishmaya is rendered a heavenly estate or a heavenly state itself relating to an earthly life. Where Dishmaya and Beshmaya appear, kingdom of heaven relating to a hereafter as it's employed. The distinction is necessary, but the accuracy of its application in each case is open to question. The Aramaic words include both meanings with subtle hints as to which is the basic underlying thought, whether earthly life, life hereafter, or both, available from the phonics and context. The English words clearly distinguish between earthly life and a hereafter and cannot mean both. However, in the Aramaic text, that kind of a distinction is not justified. And so the broader context, another translation of this concept can also be the kingdom of expansion. And, you know, when I tap into the fact that we don't have the heaven, quote-unquote heavenly, and the earthly as two separate things in Aramaic, which has been done in the Greek translations, but rather there is an expansive aspect to it. And when you think in terms of tapping into this community of love, tapping in literally in your physiology to the presence of love, and extending that love throughout your physiology to every cell in your structure, especially if there's pain somewhere within your structure, to literally tap into. You know, some of you are familiar with the love exchange exercise that we do. And to do that exercise, what we invite people to do is close their eyes, go inside, and tap into the deepest, clearest presence of love that you can feel. Recognizing that the truth of who you are is that presence of love. And in concert with the breath, by breathing, when you tap into that presence of love, when you intensify that experience, then you can direct the energy of active love throughout your physiology, literally to every cell in your structure. And when you realize that active present love is the master solvent of the universe, and that the breath is, or can be seen as, the distribution point, and that when you direct your breath, you know, once you've done that love exchange and take a breath and literally imagine the breath directing that presence of love throughout your structure or anywhere throughout your world. Now, we've spoken of this before. There's nothing we know of that can stop the high energy wave that leaves a mind when we think a thought. And so tapping into that presence of love and breathing it throughout your structure and throughout the world is a powerful thing to do. And then if you look at the, you know, you head down the page from that idea of Malkuta Dushmaya, then you see several variations as it's used throughout Matthew.
And you have another hand.
Oh, great. Cool. Let's say hello.
It is Susan 610. You're on the air.
Hey. Michael.
Welcome, dear heart.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello. You gave an example of changing a word, humility. I think every once in a while, if you could introduce a word, because I understand the concept, but I never got it the way I just got it when you said that. Seeing humility is kind of groveling. I know, brain cells fire in funny ways, I suppose for all of us. But in any case, that was so perfect, and it was also perfect because my son is... I've been on and off the radio show. You know, my son will call me, and I always pick up because he's having such a hard time. And one
right.
of the things he does is he, if he isn't being a doctor, he feels worthless and useless and thinks he shouldn't even live. And he wrote a note to his
Ouch.
Boys, which he isn't going to, I know, he isn't going to send it. He said, but it was basically, I just wanted you to know that I hope you valued me or thought me an okay person, even if I stopped working as a doctor. Well, he knows darn well they adore him, but he had to put it on paper, and he even told them that he was thinking of ways that he could not be alive anymore, but he said, I won't do that because I know that would hurt you very much, but this is how bad it feels to me. He's telling them in his mind in this letter, which he isn't going to send. So one of the things I said to him, which might sound cruel, but I said, you think you're special enough in a way. It's a kind of arrogance to think the way you're thinking. It's like you're having a huge ego attack in reverse. And he said, you know, I understand what you're saying. I understand. If I could be more humble about my life, I probably wouldn't be thinking this way. And then you talked about humility right on your radio show. And Dr. Tim on his show was talking about how we use language and this Rosenberg book, I forget the title of it already, Nonviolent Communication, which I read years ago, and you teach a much better iteration of the same thing, using much more helpful words anyway, synchronicity is amazing. What you are saying,
it
and
is.
I'm listening to it, what I'm listening to you, to with you and Dr. Tim are things I want my son to hear, but I'm hearing them, and I don't know how to translate them to him because he's not open to my ways of being well. He's amazed. He says, I can't believe you enjoy life so much. I can't believe you have no more anxiety. How did you do that? And I say, well, I use these tools. Oh, and then I've tried to use them. What's happening? I mean, the kid and I are really good friends, but is it because I'm his mother? I know I'm all over the place in what I'm saying, but I want him to use these things, the love exchange with himself in the mirror. Talk about needed and not happening. And he's working with a very old school therapist who goes through his early traumas and this and that and sort of dwells on them. And the newest thinking is that you don't want to stay there very long. You want to start building up your strength and wellness and so forth. What were you going to say, Michael?
Well, what if you sit with him into a love exchange?
Oh, my God,
and
Michael,
encourage
I wish
him.
He were open. Yeah, I wish he were open to that sort of thing. You know,
well, I would think if you were sitting face-to-face and you said, I've got an exercise I'd like to do with you, and here's what mm-hmm. I'm going to do. Not demanding anything of him, but just here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to close my eyes, and I'm going to tap into that which brings me to the most powerful state of love that I can experience in me. And then I'm going to open my eyes, and I'm going to imagine extending that love through my eyes to you. In fact, through my whole body to you. And what I'm going to ask you to do is just raise your hand and see what, if anything, you experience when I open my eyes, if you experience anything coming from me. I mean, some of the hardest intellects I've seen over the years put their hand up and they go, oh, my God, are you kidding? I can actually feel that.
Wow.
That might be a simple enough thing for him to have a breakthrough. And then, once complete, whatever he shares with you that he feels or doesn't feel, you know, do you feel anything on your face? Do you feel anything on your body? Do you feel anything on your hand? If you think about, you know, 20 seconds before I started to do this exercise, how did you feel physically, mentally, emotionally? Do you feel any different now? Well, 90% of people go, well, now that you mention that, yeah, I do feel different. Gee, when we first started, I was feeling kind of heavy, and now I'm lighter, and gee, they, you know, something shifted. So that might be, you know, with him as a passive part of that exercise. And then, you know, complete that and see where it goes, and if it feels appropriate, then maybe invite him to do the same. Invite him to close his eyes, tap into the deepest, clearest love that he can. And then imagine extending it through his eyes to you. Now, as you tap into that energy and send it to him, it's going to affect his physiology. And if he'll return the favor, it's going to affect his physiology on still a whole other level. That might be all the opening you need. Clearly, there is a reality in his mind that in order to be of value, he has to be doing something monumental, like an ordinary life won't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so starting to recognize that he has value for one single reason and one reason only. The Creator put the breath of life in him.
Mm.
You know? And you might use an example of, let's say, his son. Does he have to perform in order for you to see him as valuable?
Mm. Yeah, we have had that.
Then why do you lay that burden on yourself that you have to perform in order to be seen as valuable?
Yeah. That discussion we have actually had, and there's no question that he wouldn't require anything of his boys to love them. or think they're totally globally acceptable. He just won't apply it to himself.
But if you ask the question, and he can start to do some research in his mind as to why he does that to himself, you might come across the root of what it is he holds about himself that's false.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've already told you about that. He really took a blow when he wasn't taken into this talent and gifted program when he was in the third grade and all his best pals were in it. And he was a dummy. He was in the dummy group. And he has tried to prove that he's not dumb ever since. I don't know why it has such a hold on him now, but it still has.
Because a kid, you know, third grade's what, 8 or 9?
Yeah.
It's a pretty tough, impressionable place to come from.
Mm.
And, you know, if we look at the family pattern, and I don't know what kind of relationship, you know, he had with Tim, but Tim's relationship with his dad, Tim's done a lot of work, shared a lot on the show over the years about his relationship with his dad and how tough that was, and chances are some of those dynamics were passed on.
Yeah.
You know, that power person stuff. You know, if we could get him to look at the fact that everybody's got a reality and that this reality that he holds about himself is just false.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a way to get him to question this reality of value that he holds about himself, that might open space for a new Jonathan to show up.
Yeah. He's been doing some writing. He's trying to write to the man who's kind of the hospital administrator, who is very sympathetic, trying to put into words why he's not ready to come back and may never be ready to come back. But looking at himself, all he has said today about all that is he's been seeing a therapist who I think is not a good person for him to work with. It's an old-fashioned type therapist who says things like, well, I think your self-esteem is so connected with your work, I think you better go back to work. And he thinks that he agrees with that and then finds that he can't do it. And he thinks he ought to go into a mental hospital. And I said, Jonathan, you are so healthy. Your body is screaming at you because you haven't been listening. That is health. Your body is telling you something you've got to look at. And until you pay attention, you're going to be very uncomfortable. So, you know, it's too soon to go back to work, or it may never be time to go back to work. But he says his therapist is encouraging him. And anyway, Michael, I just, the love exchange thing, we'll have to get through some family cultural resistance there. Being New Englanders, not expressing ourselves that way, it would be squirm city for both of us to do it the way you suggest.
So,
but I'm going to find a way
so
to do it.
Wouldn't that be a great place to start out with the acknowledgement of, you know, there's been a real challenge in our family system, in the culture we have here, about expressing love that we are and expressing that to each other, with each other. You know, start the conversation out acknowledging that. And here's a way that, you know, maybe we can break some of that ice that has developed in our family system that never belonged here.
Yeah.
You know, just acknowledging there's an elephant in the room and here's something we can do about it.
Yeah.
Simple. It's not a big self-exposure. And, I mean, I've seen that love exchange do some powerful things in people very quickly.
Nice.
And I've put on notes for today. There were also, I've got four other links besides our love exchange link. where there were studies done. One of them is called Eye Gazing Benefits. One was a London exercise, Amnesty International experiment, and an eye contact study. All of them are basically the same, and they had people that were total strangers just sit down and look into each other's eyes for a minute or 3 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the exercise, I mean, people are hugging each other, and they're total strangers.
Well, that would be a lot easier than being family member, that's for sure.
But I've put that out there. I've put links to all that. So, you know. Okay.
So acknowledge your part in it, Susan.
Yeah,
acknowledge
definitely.
Your part in that. It's part of our family dynamic, and it's something we need to work through, something we need to let go of.
Yep.
I remember back in the early days when my book was published, I used to go to speak at a lot of conferences, you know, health fairs and that sort of thing. And there was a fellow who, and it was the first time I'd heard of this idea of gazing, but he had a workshop, you know, different presenters would have workshops, and this guy had a workshop, and he charged $25, and you went in, you sat in a chair, and he didn't say anything, he just gazed at you for, I don't know, half an hour or whatever.
Woo, yeah.
And that was his workshop.
Mm-hmm.
It's powerful. And, you know, if it's too much in terms of breaking the family ice to even say anything, maybe just sit in the room with him and do that love exchange without saying anything even.
I could do that. In fact, I do it a lot. Anyway, just send him all my love, but he wouldn't be aware of it. Superficially, he wouldn't be aware. Is that what you're saying? I'm just doing it.
No, I'm saying that he may become very aware of it very quickly if you're focused there, and that is
okay.
The energy that you're sending.
I see.
And if you've got any...
My question is, does he know, has he been told that I'm doing it? He might feel it, but if I told him I was doing that, he'd just go up to the molding and stay there.
Yeah. Hmm. Then don't tell him. Just do it.
Okay.
And if
I can
he asks
do that.
What's going on, I mean, you may. I mean, I've watched people whose edges soften, whose traumas melt. I mean, it's just profound what happens in the presence of active love, and we all have the ability to extend that energy and to connect because. You know, as the line in the worksheet says, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. I mean, literally,
yeah.
You know, you're like matched tuning forks. Yours is a middle C
right.
And his is a middle C. You get it going strong enough, it's got to move in him. There's no other way it can happen. You can't hit a middle C tuning fork on the desk and put it near a second tuning fork, and that second tuning fork stands still. It can't do it.
Yeah.
So we'll be joining in holding that space with and for you and for him and extending that energy in his direction.
Thanks. Well, and yesterday your letter, there were parts of that letter toward the beginning, not that any of it wasn't, I mean, some of it was teaching that I had heard before, but the beginning, the summary of the text from the Old Testament that invite Israelites to kill everybody here and there. And it got me wondering. I have a friend who's a scholar of prophetic Old Testament poetry. I want to talk to her about this. The mindset, the permission to annihilate other people. We did it in our country. I was going for a walk with Tim Bingham yesterday, and his mother being Jewish, I said, Tim, do you think the Israelites in the Old Testament, that they had the right to do that? And he said, well, they did do it. And because they did it, I think they still have the right. They have the right to claim their land, no matter who else is on it. So Tim and I are walking on opposite sides of the street for a while because of that one.
And, anyway, of course, someone who walks around thinking they can assault another like that has generated such an horrific assault energy within themselves that there's the very energy that will draw assault to them. You know, when the Jewish community says never enough, never again, Yeah. What they're doing is setting up the literal energy. You remember we've shared with you before that I did a Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop in the Holocaust Museum in Fort Lauderdale. And it was one of the most powerful workshops I've ever done. And we went strictly all the way through right out of the Old Testament. And everybody, we ended up, I brought up, I was hesitant at first, but we went through and talked about the whole Holocaust and all. And what part do we need to heal in ourselves to clean this up, to change this? Because as long as we're standing around saying never again, that's a creative act and we're setting it up again.
Yep. Totally, I agree. Well, so, it's 201, Michael.
All right, young lady, you have a blessed one. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
All right, lots of love. Take care.
Jeannie.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.